You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 27 May. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios. On the show today, we chat with Travis Robson from IG Markets on the Absa update and the reopening of the New York Stock Exchange trading pit. Andries van Heerden from Afrimat on doing great deals. And Nolan Wappenaar, Anchor Capital, on our volatile rand and where it's going next. Some morning headlines from Business Day. Stephen Kosoff, he of Investec, founder of course, calls for JSE rule changes to allow companies to quickly raise cash in times of crisis. Reuters reports Boeing set to announce significant U.S. job cuts this week. And morning markets, the U.S. Dow was up over 2%, S&P 500 up 1.2%, NASDAQ 0.2%, but green across the board. Asia green, Sydney and Tokyo both around 0.8% greener. Commodities mostly a little red, palladium the exception, up literally a fraction of a percent. We've got the ZAR at 1738 and the top 40 opening levels looking at about 100 points down at minus 0.2%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Travis Robson, he's co-head of IG Markets South Africa. Travis, morning. Thanks for your time. Absa trading update yesterday. I mean, in some senses, tells us a lot. They do say, and I quote, difficult to provide guidance for the rest of the year. Fair comment to that. What I was interested in was their look at the economy. They're looking at a GDP for South Africa of minus 10%. That is well worse than revenue, Saab, Treasury, IMF, World Bank. They were in the 6 to 7% range. Minister Dlamini Zuma yesterday talking about unemployment to rise to 50%. It is going to be a horror show of data for South Africa as 2020 rolls out, as the impact of the lockdown comes through.
Yeah, it wasn't felt definitely on the markets yesterday, though. A bit of a rally, I think, following the US and coming out of the holiday spree, as well as optimism over a possible COVID vaccine from Novavax. Novavax seems to be the big name in the US. But yeah, local front, yeah, I was quite surprised. Rally on our markets, lots of negative news, as you say, forecasting very low GDP. I don't think we must shy away from the fact that we've got unions on the public sector looking at striking if their workers go back in level 3 lockdown. Mm-hmm. That's also going to put pressure. The last thing we need on the South Africa front is a big public sector strike right now. But yeah, so interesting times in the markets. I didn't have a look too closely at Absa's results. We were looking at Tiger Brands, Tours, and Famous Brands, which was a bit of a dismal set of results for all three, in all honesty. And, you know, Famous Brands was up until year-ending 29th of Feb, so it actually excludes COVID lockdown period. So it would be interesting to see that company and how it goes forward. But, yeah, interesting day on the markets. Quite surprised by the massive rally, but I think it was just more optimism over the possibility of this COVID virus vaccine pushing U.S. markets coming out of the long weekend. And I think the realization is that governments and investors are focusing their hopes on a vaccine, as it's unlikely the economy can actively resume fully without one. So that seems to be the market.
You make a good point there, which is markets are not the economy. The markets are focusing on a vaccine. The markets are being driven by Federal Reserve and other central bank stimulus. And there's very often that disconnect between what we see, what we would call Main Street, you know, me, you, and the listeners on the ground, versus what's happening on Wall Street, the markets. They're a beast of their own, and they have their own guidelines and guidance as to where they'll be going.
Absolutely. You know, we can't look at the markets and, you know, we're pushing into sometimes all-time highs and then we crash. Very different to what we see on the streets. You know, I do think we need to look at the markets, you know, from an investment point of view, because it does underpin a lot of companies. And, you know, those companies actually do make the wheel of the economy turn. But like you say, it is very, very different to the underlying situation on the ground for the public.
You mentioned Famous Brand results, as you said, to February, not helping as much. Two comments struck me. The first was they say restaurant landscape will be irrevocably transformed. They're not saying it's going to return to normal. They're saying it's just going to be different. And then they say the casual dining segment, slow recovery, and unforgiving. What they're telling us is that, and I suppose it's intuitive when you think about it, is that a pandemic is going to have long-term and, frankly, lasting changes on consumer behavior, and we have got to, companies are going to have to adjust accordingly or, frankly, become irrelevant.
Yeah, you know, I definitely got that tone from the message and reading through the actual statement. One of the big key areas of focus included the investment of non-core brands and non-core manufacturing and logistics facilities. Maybe that's just underpinning, or, you know, like you said, the fine dining restaurants and all their brands behind that. And also a key area of focus is expansion program, which I was quite surprised to hear from a struggling, struggling numbers, you know, growing leading brands. They're looking at taking away non-core, growing the leading brands. But what are their leading brands? You know, the fine dining space, the likes of Tash's and whatnot. You've got to think those things are going to suffer through. They're also not talking about financial support again for GBK in the UK. Yeah. I wasn't surprised by that. I think they're throwing a lot of money at a bad business, and but it'd be interesting to see how that business focuses on de-investing in those non-core brands and growing some of the leading brands, and it'll be interesting to see what those leading brands are going forward. No dividend for the investor, though, so if you're a shareholder looking for a dividend, you're not going to get one from Famous Brands at the moment.
If you're a shareholder looking for a dividend, that cupboard is very bare. And lastly, Travis, the trading pit in New York reopened yesterday. I don't know if you've ever visited. I haven't. It's a bit of an oddity. It's a throwback to the pre-tech days. But I got to say, part of me kind of likes that open outcry relic that exists at the New York Stock Exchange.
I haven't been. I've been to the trading pits in London, the old trading pits in London, but never in New York. But I like the old outcry. I think you know, it was a grand reopening in the U.S. markets with the S&P within an earshot of that psychological fundamental 3,000 mark.
Yeah.
And I think with the open cry and that psychological mark, kind of like pushed the market into a bit of a, you know, a bit of a spin. But definitely, we're gonna have to see what today brings. Another day on the markets.
Yeah, and I think me and you and some others, we need to make a trip. We need to get to New York. We need to get to that trading pit. Travis Robson, co-head IG Markets South Africa. Appreciate the time.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I was chatting with Andreas. About to chat with Andreas van Heerden. He's CEO of Afrimat. I was last year digging around Afrimat and looking at the deals. I found a presentation from Afrimat. And the one thing that struck me, in a world full of deals that, frankly, most often don't work, Afrimat has a brilliant track record. Every deal has worked over time. It's added value. No write-downs. I thought worth a chat. Andreas, appreciate your time this morning. What is the core secret to Afrimat doing deals? I mean, you make them work, whereas, truthfully, about two-thirds typically don't.
Morning, Simon. Yeah, thank you very much. It doesn't always feel that way, though. I think that what has really worked very well for us over the years is, firstly, we have a very talented team of people, a small team who actively goes out and look for specific targets within a defined strategy. We really investigate quite a number of prospects before we actually zoom in on a specific one, and then, you know, go through a very rigorous due diligence. And then, you know, the third step is really, really doing proper project management of the execution once you've taken it over, and put a lot of focus and attention and the very best people on the job to get it done. And we've been very blessed. Some deals have worked better than others.
Mm-hmm.
We've made a few mistakes. Fortunately, they were so small that they, in deal size, that they didn't really attract a lot of attention. But not everyone was good.
Yeah,
some deals
The mistakes were small enough to frankly, not be noticeable. One of the overused words in deals is synergies. My sense from Aframat is you almost come at it from a different perspective. It's more about sticking to your core competency. And what I mean by that, if we go all the way back to the listing days of Aframat in the early 2000s, very much, you know, a quarry business, aggregate, your expertise, in a sense, is open cast mining, hence the iron ore deal you did, for example. It seems strange, but that was sticking to your knitting. It was doing what you and your team understand and have done successfully for many, many years.
Yes, it's interesting. You're exactly right. Staying close to your core, and then, you know, when initially going from construction materials to industrial minerals, it was close to our core, but it was slightly more complex with more precision mining, understanding geology a little bit better. Then going on to iron ore, that was just another step, getting into processing a little bit more and understanding things like DMSs and that sort of thing better, getting the right skills on board. And now the next step for us is now into the reductant space.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, just adding a few more skills onto the core and making sure that we get the very best people. It's very strongly reliant on good people. You know, making sure that you understand which skills you still need and going out and finding people with a lot of experience in that field and bringing them on board. We've been very, very blessed with really, really good people.
That's a great point. I mean, we look at deals and we look at the numbers and the synergies, and I use that word in inverted commas, and spreadsheets and the like. Truthfully, at the core of a deal is going to be those people. And the second core of the and from the presentation I saw, which was from last year from Aframat, you know, cash is king. Make it back soon, and perhaps even more importantly, do not overpay. The price you pay is so critical. You guys walked away from Universal Coal last year. The price wasn't working. At the wrong price, no deal is good.
Now that's exactly right. The success of a deal is made the day when you negotiate the price. If you overpay, you're doomed for the rest of the project's life. And just on the point of synergies, with all due respect to some of our corporate finance experts, a deal is not about merging two balance sheets. That is not what it's about. It is really about people and getting the best out of a business. And the synergies and cutting costs and things like that is really not high up on our agenda when we look at a transaction, because it's not about merging two balance sheets and trying to cut out costs and that sort of thing. That really is not important in a deal.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and perhaps at the heart of it. And I think from this chat, what I take away most is, again, it's about people. Business is always about people. Deal making, perhaps even more so, and having that team and parking the egos at the door, making the numbers work. Andreas van Heerden, CEO of Aframat, really appreciate your time this morning, sir.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
We'll be chatting now with Nolan Vapanar. He's co-chief investment officer at Anchor Capital. The one thing that took me, truthfully, ages to learn is that over the long term, sure, the rand may be a one-way bet. It's going to weaken against major currencies. But short, medium term, man, that rand can do almost anything. And we have seen significant strengthening after the 9/11 crisis. The Tsar was 13-odd, went back to sub-6. Certainly I didn't expect that. Took me by surprise. Nolan, appreciate your time this morning. We saw another currency collapse earlier this year, the pandemic. No surprises around that. What we have seen is the rand coming back, trading this morning at 17.38. This sort of recovery for the rand is not unusual. We saw it post 9/11. We saw it post the global financial crisis. And when Finance Minister Nhlanhla Nene was fired, the rand will come back to that sort of fair value range more times than not.
Good morning, Simon. Thank you very much. Absolutely. That is our perspective as well. The rand versus the dollar is one of the most volatile currencies in the world. Mm-hmm. And at times of global stress, as you mentioned, 9/11 you mentioned, 2002 is another good example, the rand does tend to blow out quite significantly. A lot of traders use the rand as a potential hedge for emerging markets. So they'll put on short positions against the rand because the rand is liquid. And as the crisis plays out, as the dust settles from the storm, you start to see the rand recover. And I think that's very much our perspective at the moment. So where we're at, if we look at the rand, is we believe in a purchasing power parity model, mm-hmm. which basically says that over time the rand will depreciate, as you say. But the rand is expected to depreciate at, broadly speaking, the inflation differential between the U.S. and ourselves. So somewhere between about 2 and 4% per annum on average. But around that, it's going to have a lot of volatility. Looking at the PPP model, we think that the fair value of the rand is around about 15 rand to the dollar right now. So what we're saying to our clients, what we're saying is our assessment is the rand will probably recover and it will trade with a 15 handle on it, mm-hmm. albeit that the recovery might be a little bit slower. So if we look at what's happening around the world right now, it's almost like a wave of unlock optimism. 80% of what's happening in the globe is, or in the rand, is driven by foreign events.
Yeah.
And right now, most of the developed markets are getting through the pandemic. They're getting through, the worst of it. We're seeing the number of infections decline, and we're seeing people being unlocked. For instance, yesterday, the New York Stock Exchange actually opened up its trading floor again for mm-hmm. the first time in 2 months. So as this optimism feeds through the system, we're seeing a sort of rebound in risk assets. We're seeing a rebound of appetite for risk assets. And the rand is benefiting from that. You know, to put it in perspective, yesterday foreigners bought about 750 million rands worth of South African bonds. The day before that, they bought another 2 billion rands worth of bonds. And all of these factors, as the foreigners start to turn positive on emerging markets again, are supporting the South African rand.
And what you're expecting it easy another, if we're down to 16, 15, that's about another 15%. And as you said, that's the optimism, risk appetite for EMs, the traction yields on our bonds. Level 3 from Monday help even further as we start seeing another 8 million odd South Africans going back to work. There's always chance. I mean, you're calling it back to sort of the fair parity. It could undershoot over a given time. It could perhaps move even stronger.
Our fair price is 15, but if our assessment is correct, half of the time we would expect it to be a bit stronger. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, 6 months ago it was stronger.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, definitely it is possible that we would see the rand stronger again. I would just caution on the optimism for the rand, because in the near term we think that this euphoria in emerging or for global markets will continue. It's got a lot of momentum behind it, but equally so, our Reserve Bank has necessarily and rightly so been forced into interest rate cuts in South Africa. So the interest rate differential, that sort of extra interest that foreigners are able to earn in South Africa by buying short-dated rand instruments, has declined quite markedly from where it's historically been, and certainly from where it was through previous crises. So from that perspective, we do think the rand continues to strengthen, but we think it probably grinds stronger, a little bit slower than it historically does, or historically has. Mm-hmm. And we also think that in the context of the risks that South Africa faces with regard to a precariously balanced fiscal situation, that the foreigners will probably have a little bit less risk appetite in the long run. So we're not as convinced that you're going to see the rand strengthen as dramatically through its fair value as we have seen in the past. And we also think it will probably be a bit of a slower run, more of a marathon than a sprint for the rand recovery, though we do remain positive on the rand.
A quick last question. If we are looking for rand stronger in the medium term, you're saying to clients, if you've got offshore assets, most people have, perhaps a bit of a hedge in the currency so that if it does move that 15%, we kind of don't get damaged from the currency move.
That's precisely what we've been saying to our clients. That's precisely what we did to our client for our clients, and we've done that on our side. And what we've been saying is, you know, with the rand down to about 16.50, we still think it makes sense to put on currency hedges. Once it pushes past, or once it pushes stronger than about 16.50, we think just tap off potentially on your hedges or stop hedging, because you're starting to move close enough to the normal environment that you can start to normalize positions again. The massive recovery will be largely done there.
We'll leave that there. Nolan Vapanar, Co-Chief Investment Officer, Anchor Capital. That's it for the show today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30. We're on moneyweb.co.za or the app. And, of course, podcasts wherever good podcasts are found from 7 a.m. Chat to us on social media, hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to our guests. My thanks to Cordora and Eddie for helping to put the show together. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.